The Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast is brought to you by the following sponsors: EliteForm.com, IgnitionAPG.com, PlayUSA at PLAEUSA.com, and Sorinex Exercise Equipment at Sorinex.com. And now, the Iron Game Chalk Talk Podcast. Welcome to Iron Game Chalk Talk with your host, Ron McKeefer.
Every time our athletes walk into this weight room, they're going to be pushed to the max.
Let's go! Let's go! Everything you got!
On this podcast, hear Coach McKeefer's straight talk about training, featuring the top strength and conditioning professionals from around the world. And now, here's your host, Ron McKeefer.
Hey guys, welcome back to Iron Game Chalk Talk. I'm your host, Ron McKeefer, and this is episode number 140. Super excited to have Tim DeFrancesco with us today. Tim is the head strength coach for the Los Angeles Lakers, and he's got a great story. He started off as a physical therapist, got his doctorate in physical therapy, and then made the transition to human performance and then the strength conditioning, and has done a phenomenal job everywhere he's ever been. But obviously, he's leading one of the top NBA programs out there, and so we wanted to have him on to talk a little bit about basketball programming and evaluation techniques that he uses when athletes come in for the first time, having come from different programs, different stages in their career, different training different training ages. And so we get into all that. I know you're really going to enjoy it. Before we do, though, I want to make sure we recognize our sponsor for this show, Elite Form. I got a chance to run into those guys, Skip and the whole gang out at San Antonio, and just so blown away by this their generosity and the way that they give back to our community and the product. I mean, it's still, all these years later, still a game changer. And being able to create some diagnostics that you can use with your athletes on a daily basis to give immediate feedback. There's not a whole lot out there that's remotely close. And so if you're in that market, I'd encourage you to check out Elite Form. More importantly, just reach out to them, let them know how much you appreciate them sponsoring the show and bringing it to you guys for free. But just a class act organization, class act people, and I can't say enough great things about Elite Form. Lastly, started a new podcast for 2016, Ask Coach Mac. And, I wanted to put this out. I get so many questions via email and Facebook and the whole deal. And this was a creative way that I came across to be able to answer those questions, do it maybe one time, but be able to have it so that people can reference it and go back to it. And so basically the setup and the structure is that you go to askcoachmac.com, and at the bottom of the page is a widget that you can hit record, and you'll record a question, whatever your question may be. And I want to get into all the three areas of kind of what I've written about in the book, the technician side. So it can be a technical question, a managerial question, how we run an intern program, how I manage staff, how do we evaluate them? Or it can be an entrepreneurial question, creating a podcast or writing a book or speaking at national conferences or whatever. But I wanted to create this as a way to, again, continually give back. And maybe, if I can answer for one person, it's a good chance that it's going to be something that other people have as well. So I'd encourage you to submit those questions. It's going to be weekly at first. And if it grows and all that, then we'll maybe make it more than once a week. So go there, askcoachmac.com, leave a question, and I'll look to feature you on the show. So sit back, enjoy this episode with Tim. I know you're going to get a ton out of it, and we'll see you on the other side. All right, guys, super excited to have Tim DeFrancesco, right? Did I get it right?
You got it. You nailed it. Not many people get it right. Not many people get it. You nailed it.
I appreciate it, brother. Well, hey, guys, I'm excited to have Tim on. Tim's the head strength coach for the LA Lakers, and a guy that I've followed from afar. And this is actually our first time ever really connected, which is the beauty of this show, man. This is what's cool about this show is it brings people together and get a chance to talk shop and let everybody kind of be a fly on the wall. And so, man, I really appreciate you spending some time. I know you're in the middle of the season, but I appreciate you coming on the show, brother.
Man, it's awesome to be on, man. I'm looking forward to this.
I want to get into it a little bit because, you know, I'd like to go into your journey, kind of how you got into strength and conditioning and what kind of, you know, I mean, L.A. Lakers, man, that's a freaking dream job for a lot of people listening. How did you get there?
Right, right. So, I mean, I think for me getting into the profession and getting into this route of the profession of performance and strength and conditioning, it was really me being a non unathletic white kid from New England trying to make it and get it done in athletics at whatever level I could make it to, and ended up reaching Division III basketball as college basketball as my pinnacle. But for me to get there with what I had to work with, I had to try to figure out whatever edge and advantage I could get, and I really enjoyed solving that puzzle for myself and the people that helped me solve that puzzle, to the point where it drove me to want to be able to do that for other folks down the road. And so I think, you know, I went a little bit of a winding path. I started off in athletic training for my undergrad, finished that program and went immediately into physical therapy, got my doctorate in physical therapy, and was working as a PT at an outpatient clinic outside of Boston, and had started up my own performance training facility at a small scale on the side, TD Athlete's Edge, and realized, I mean, I loved the rehab, I loved the different backgrounds I had between athletic training and physical therapy, and really enjoyed that, but My area of passion was the performance and the strength and conditioning hammer that I could learn about and then eventually sort of use to it was the greatest tool for me to be able to give the most impact on the people I was working with in my opinion. So
try to get them before they were broken, right?
Yeah, right, exactly. So, you know, winding my way through that process and that's where I realized performance and strength and conditioning was where it was at for me. I took a job with the Bakersfield Jam, NBA D League team out of Bakersfield, California. And it was sort of one of those things where came up and fell into my lap, and I just was like, you know what, why not? I hadn't at the time really practiced in a team setting, and I was really I think craving that environment a little bit. So went for it. Just packed up and moved from New England to Bakersfield, California. And
they haven't kicked you out yet, huh?
Yeah, right, exactly. So it's touch and go, though, I'll tell you that much. So Bakersfield was a great experience. I was in minor league sports. If you're the athletic trainer, you're the strength coach, you're the travel coordinator, you're driving the bus, you're packing the bus. I mean, right. It's a little bit of everything. So it was a great experience. If you could pull it off at that level, you can. You know, keep the balls in the air at that level. You can do it just about anywhere, I think. And so it really helped me to get a feel for having to wear different hats and be able to do multitasking that we have to do in this profession. One of the seasons that we were the Bakersfield Jam, that I was with the Jam, we were affiliated with the Lakers. And I had a little bit of interaction with Gary Vitti, head athletic trainer here with the Lakers, and little to my knowledge was on the radar for him to fill a vacancy he had coming up as the head strength and conditioning coach position, and the rest is a little bit of history. I mean, was in the right place at the right time, apparently doing some of the right stuff, and the right people noticed.
No, that's awesome, man. Well, you know, I think, you know, one thing I pulled out of that, and it's so important to highlight for, I think, young strength coaches that are listening, is that, you know, that experience, that Bakersfield experience, I mean, that wasn't, you weren't going into all the Coliseums, right? It wasn't packed. It wasn't, you know, there wasn't, you didn't have the freaking, the cool gear and all that.
Right.
You know, but that, I would imagine, I think you would echo probably that it was instrumental in teaching you how to be a servant leader.
No doubt.
And, you know, wear those different hats. And as a strength coach, you know that, you know, those 2 hours that you have in the weight room are only just a fraction of the interaction that you'll have with the players and the impact that you can have on them. And those other 22 hours is when you have the most influence. You
know? That's right.
And so yeah. I that's cool. I'm glad you brought that up. You know, when you were working in that PT clinic and you started your own business and you had kind of this passion for performance because of, you know, kind of being a self-made athlete.
Right.
Who were some of your early influences? I mean, who were some of the people that you kind of modeled your career after?
Yeah, I mean, I would say I was constantly going back and forth and asking to be a fly on the wall with two people that really stand out for me in the New England area, but you know, are known everywhere in this industry is Brijesh Patel, head strength coach at Quinnipiac University, and then Eric Cressy, who most people recognize right off the bat as well. So those guys, I mean, I was lucky enough to have had their positive reaction when I first reached out, and nobody knew me from Adam, and sure. They could have easily said, "Hey, man, I'm kind of running ragged. I'm busy. I'm crazy over here on my end. I'm sorry." And when I reached out and said, "Hey, can I shoot down your way and be a fly on the wall and watch you do what you do?" They were always open arms and willing to talk shop and bounce ideas off of. So I think those two for me stand out as guys that really helped me to get an idea of what it means to be a pro in this at this level.
Yeah, both those guys have been on the show, and so I could echo that as well. They're awesome, man.
Oh yeah, some of the best.
What about, you know, in that experience? I mean, obviously you get thrown into it. You know, not necessarily having ever worked in a team setting in that environment. Well, I mean, I would imagine you made some mistakes, right? We've all had.
No doubt.
What was probably one of the biggest mistakes you made, and how? And then, kind of take us there so people can learn from that, and hopefully avoid that tripwire in their own careers.
Right. So I think initially trying to be everything to everybody and is you know, it's just impossible. And when I say that, I think just generally speaking, it's like, from a programming standpoint, anyways, you're sitting there trying to put together the all time best program. And on paper, you see what it looks like. You're like, yeah, this is going to be great. And then all of a sudden the season hits and you're looking around and you're like, well, I didn't factor this in. Well, I wasn't really thinking what it felt like to get off of a flight at 2 a.m.
right.
and have to then ramp it back up at 10 a.m. and or get on a flight at 4 a.m. and, you know, whatever it might be. And so I think, I think the mistakes came and worked themselves out as I realized what we learn in the books is simply a base for then becoming a artist in the trenches. Because you're going to have to take that information, and it's certainly not useless by any means. It's critical. But you better be able to be flexible and be able to mold that into something that's usable in the trenches.
Absolutely.
And, you know, so I think I worked my way through that, like probably a lot of us do, going from curriculum to the trenches.
Yeah, artist in the trenches. I like that. I'm going to steal that one.
There you go.
The, you know, when you, with the NBA, you know, this is, I mean, you're dealing with some of the most extraordinary athletes in the world, you know, but it's a melting pot, right? I mean, they all come in at various levels, various training ages. I mean, you might get the high school kid that's right off the high school playground, you know, AAU team that never lifted a weight in his entire life. And then you might get the guy that's been playing in the league for 15 years or so. And you're receiving them all in different stages, you know, different stages,
yeah.
Different healths, things like that. Talk to me a little bit. I want to really dive into kind of your evaluation process. They walk in the door. What's the first step, you know, to kind of see what you got?
Yeah. So for me, it's a really good point, because I think I think a lot of people sort of assume that, well, these guys are just top of the top and they're ready to roll. And you just kind of, you know, you just kind of try to enhance what they're already great at a little bit. And it's, people will be surprised, I think, at the asymmetries, limitations, or just lack of exposure to the weight room that right. some of these guys have had. So yeah, all different levels, and I need to initially sit down with a conversation with them. I mean, just talk me through what's worked for you? What would you like to dig into? What hasn't worked for you? Where have things gone wrong from a training standpoint? All those kinds of things. So get to know the person, get to know their history, their training history, their physical history, and what you, I think from that you start to get a feel for what motivates them as well.
Right.
So, you know, you might have guys that sit there and are just being honest when they say, hey, I'm going to spend time with you, but it's basically so that I can look good on Manhattan Beach during, you know, when I go out there and I put myself on Instagram.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, it is what it is. You have to find those trigger points, those things that motivate each individual. I mean, so that conversation, first and foremost, for me is huge. And then from there, I'm a really avid user of the FMS system and also the SFMA, depending on injury status and pain levels and that kind of thing. So, probably no need to get too far into what that's all about, but really helps me to gain a roadmap of where the movement limitations, movement asymmetries might be for an individual before we start loading them up. And then we have a phenomenal staff here. We have our head physical therapist will do a table based evaluation, which then, you know, me being a physical therapist, it kind of helps to be able to talk the language of what she's doing. That's Dr. Judy Cito, and she's you know, phenomenal in terms of being able to recognize things from that standpoint. And then we put it all together to be able to start to build out a plan for the individual.
You know, I mean, you talk about the conversation, and that's one of the things that I do as well. But you know, we talk a lot about their why. What, finding out why they, you know, why they train.
Yeah.
What's going to be the things, the trigger points, like you mentioned, that's right. going to get them to do some of those things. And, you know, one thing that we always talk about is, you know, you want them to eat the meat and potatoes, but you better give them a little sugar or they're not going to buy into it. And so, yeah,
no,
if they want to look good, great. I mean, that's a byproduct. You know, training hard, that's a byproduct.
Sure.
You know, and so, but especially, yeah, I couldn't agree with you more, having worked at, you know, three NFL teams and a Major League Baseball team and all that. I mean, you know, they're just because they're great athletes doesn't mean that they're great. Weight, you know, they're great in the weight room, or they're great lifters, or anything along those lines, and so there's definitely, in fact, sometimes it's even worse, you know, because these guys have been, they were all state with, you know, with just the genetics,
absolutely,
they were scoring touchdowns with just, or you know, or dunking basketballs, you know, in a national championship game just because they were who they were,
absolutely.
And so I agree with you on that. That's great. I think when you know, with professional sports, so much of it is the in season, right? I mean, in the off season, these guys scatter, right? And you got them for just the longest training period you have with them is the in season program.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about what you're trying to accomplish, and then maybe kind of a sample day of an in season pro day and week.
Right. So. It obviously depends player to player, based off of their practice workloads, their game workloads, all that stuff, and what their goals are, what you need to accomplish, their career length at that point. Guys that have been in 16 years are gonna probably have their training's gonna look a little different than a second year guy,
right?
That kind of thing, but. Typically in season, I mean, for NBA, at this level, it's I think also for me being a fan of the NBA for so long prior to me having this, I could have never imagined in a million years the toll that the schedule takes on you.
Right. And
what these guys go through just to be able to tip the ball off at center court every other night.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, it's a matter of going back to in season. It's more of a matter of, for the high minute, high load guys, it's more of a matter of going back to their asymmetries and their limitations that you've identified in the on the first day of assessing them, back whenever that was, and just making sure that those are not rearing their ugly head or they're not being ignored, so that they end up causing problems in games or, you know, from an injury standpoint. I think it's a lot of each guy has a little bit of their own toolbox of their basics, and it might be ankle mobility, it might be hip mobility, it might be it's not just corrective stuff. It might be some guys need the hip strength and power to be able to have, you know, their game be what they want it to do. So I think, but in general, I think for me, it's really in season is more about the maintenance of those issues that are going to cause them to lose time on the court.
Mm-hmm.
When you boil that down, I guess what you're probably looking at for most NBA players is more the ability to put the brakes on or to decelerate or to land. I mean, they don't really need a lot of help from me, most of them, to push force into the ground and get high off the ground or make a fast run straight ahead. A lot of them are walking in here with pretty reasonable ability to do that.
Right.
Otherwise, they wouldn't have advanced to the levels that they're at.
Right.
What they need are things that are going to help them to be able to tolerate putting on the brakes of that freight train and landing and that kind of thing. So those basic things, including eccentric work and movement correction and things like that, are what's really important to that being able to do that.
Is there a basic kind of meat and potatoes that you're trying to get? I mean, you're trying to get like a push and a pull and a hinge or something with each guy every day or every other day or something along those lines?
Yeah, I mean, I think for some guys, it depends a little bit. I look at for the guy if they're willing and or able based off of what they what works for them and what works for me. If it ends up being some guys are raring to go, they're looking to get a little bit of a lift in almost every day. Some guys, I get them 3 days a week. It just depends. It just depends on how all those different factors. But I will typically try to get some, hip dominant, knee dominant work on the lower end of things, lower body end of things, and then guys a lot of times end up asking me like, you know, I'm used to doing a lot more bench press, man. I'm used to doing a lot more push type stuff, and we don't do quite as much of that around here. And people forget that basketball is that overhead motion, and they don't think of it as an overhead sport necessarily.
Right.
But I mean, with me, I'm always trying to think, okay, if we've got a guy, especially a guy who's getting a high volume of shots up, in game or in practice situation, you've got to protect those shoulder mechanics. You've got to put into play a lot more potentially, depending on the individual, the pull actions. And really keep that postural, that upper T-spine mobility, and then the shoulder posture and all that in a good place. Otherwise, the repetitive nature of what we're doing is going to get ahead of them, and it's hard to come back from. I think for me, it's thinking about those things along those lines.
Sure. You know, when you're dealing with, you've dealt with the wide gamut of the guys that skipped college all completely or played 1 year, and then you've dealt with the guys that have played 4 years. You know, what kind of ammunition could you give the college strength coach to be able to talk to their players that have aspirations of going on in the NBA? And just like there's always outliers, right? They can point to the guy that does nothing, that's playing and is on the All-Star team every year. but there's but that's not the norm, right?
Right.
What would you tell a college strength coach to tell their college basketball players why the about the importance of training?
I think what you have to do is you have to, so probably two routes. I mean, college and high school age athletes always have their idols or their athletes that they look up to and they recognize as who they want to be eventually. So you could take that target as number one and say, hey, look, think about guys like Steve Nash, Ray Allen, Meta World Peace, or Ron Artest, or Panda's Friend, whatever you want to call him. You got, guys like Kobe. I mean, those guys for me really stand out as nobody in their right mind who's ever spent a minute around those guys would ever question their focus and their attention to taking care of their body. And so how did that work out for them? Well, it worked out to the tune of anywhere between 15 and 20 years for each of them, which then you can take the next angle of motivating a young high school or college athlete and saying, I mean, at the end of the day, do you want, if you've got the opportunity to make millions, do you want to magnify that opportunity or not? Because each year you put yourself out there longer is just going to be X number of millions more. Right. And so, I've been around some of those guys directly, and I can tell you, I mean, Meta World Peace is on our roster still now. I mean, obviously Kobe's still going now. I mean, those guys walk into the building. From the moment they walk in, it's okay, who in this building and what am I going to do in this building to get my body to be able to endure and withstand tomorrow and the next day and the next day and the next day. And it's that's all it is. And so I think, you know, if you just look at those guys and then even bringing up guys that maybe, you know, publicly have shown a lack of awareness of training. You know, what happened to Stephen Marbury? What happened to Allen Iverson? What happened to these guys that were in those other players' draft classes that were supposed to be even better than them?
Right.
I haven't spent time necessarily with those individuals, but man, I mean, they've publicly shown a lack of awareness for the importance of taking care of your body, training, nutrition, all that stuff.
Right. Right. No, I couldn't agree more. When the guys have gone home, you know, and they go to all over the world, right? Give us a good tip. Give us something that maybe people don't think of a creative way that you've been able to stay in touch and motivate them to continue to train in the off season.
Yeah. So I think for me, we have a responsibility to be able to speak the language of our athletes. And at this point in time, I mean, the athletes that are coming into our hands at whatever level you're talking about are, they're from the millennial generation, you know, I think it's very important to be responsibly a part of social media. I think you know, it's very important to be aware of technologies and different apps and things that are out there. So, I think for me, the easy answer would be my communication with players through social media. And it can kind of stimulate a little. If you pop a picture up of a guy, I put up a picture of Julius Randle late in the off season, putting up, I think, on a hex bar deadlift like 405 or something, and then I get a text from a couple other guys at his position on our roster, like, hey, when I get in there, we're going after that, you know, and so. You know, I mean, you have to be running in the circles that they're running in, and you have to be communicating in the language they're communicating in, and I think for me that's low hanging fruit.
Sure. Well, no, I totally agree with you. We end the show here with some resources. So give us the best piece of coaching advice you ever received.
Yeah. I think from the standpoint of as I mentioned before, Brijesh Patel, and just being around him, watching him, but also hearing him talk about what works for him and really keeping things simple and just I alluded to it before as far as one of the mistakes that I've made is trying to get too complicated and make that perfect program that covers everything.
Right.
So I think from Brijesh, I was able to take that that advice of it's okay, you know, it's important to have complex knowledge and complex learning and all that. But then you have to boil it down into something that is functional and usable for the athlete that, you know, it can't be too complicated when it hits the paper, or certainly not when it hits the athlete's hands. So that for me is something I always kind of fall back to.
No, that's probably some of the best advice that I ever received was, you know, somebody, you know, one of the coaches I had worked with was I had a 10-year-old daughter at the time, and he said, you know, would your 10-year-old daughter understand what you're saying? Right. You know, and, you know, that's, you know, ultimately that's what we have to get to. I mean, we can be the smartest guy in the world, but if we can't explain it to a 10-year-old, you know, then we have problems. And so I couldn't agree with you more. What about, you know, you mentioned, I mean, you're on the road quite a bit, so I imagine you get a chance to read quite a bit, and you talk about social media and apps and things like that. Give us a book recommendation, maybe one both in strength and conditioning and out, and then a website and app recommendation.
Cool. A book. I recently read a book, Serial Winner.
Yeah.
And I think I'm not sure on the name here exactly. I believe it's Larry Wydell. So it was just a really great, and again, back to that simple breakdown of what people who are continuously successful at whatever they end up taking on, what are the habits that are a part of that, and it's nothing earth shattering. It's nothing, you know, that those secret things that nobody's ever heard of.
It never is it?
No, exactly. So I recently really enjoyed that book a lot. I think, let's see here. I think a really good app is that I've enjoyed a lot is Spark Motion.
Yep.
So Spark Motion was formerly, I think, Kinesio Capture originally it was, and really really nice app in terms of being able to capture exercises or images of athletes doing an exercise, a movement, and then having the ability to break that down for them graphically. And again, you talk about being able to communicate with an athlete. That app allows you to flip them demonstrations with after you've kind of gone on the telestrator and marked it up and shown them where you want them to be and corrected it. And I think sometimes for this generation of athletes, the graphic versus the verbal explanation is huge.
Absolutely.
And so that app for me has been really helpful to be able to show a guy, hey, here's where we're talking about right here, that little bit at the end there. See if you can get it up here. And it's been really helpful. Go ahead. Yeah.
So is there any websites that you frequent?
Yeah. Let's see here. I think you know, I enjoy Gray's stuff. I enjoy Gray Cook's stuff on you know, his website. I think the content he puts has a certain quality to it and kind of really has some depth to it that makes us step back and think about what we're doing. So I always feel like I go on there. It helps me to look in the mirror, take a step back and think through, well, geez, I didn't think about it that way. Maybe I need to reevaluate. So that would be Greg Cook's website there.
Well, those are three good ones, man. Well,
Buddy, I know you're a busy man. I don't want to take too much of your time, but this has been fantastic. What some ways people can stay up with what you got going on?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's been a blast. So for me, TD Athletes Edge, www.tdathletesedge is my website. I put up blog content there once a week at least. Depending on if it's a month like December where we were on the road for 22 out of 31 days, once a week is the bear is what I can get you. Right. If it's in the off season, sometimes I can get a couple times a week up there. But so yeah, that's where I get regular content out of my original content. And then I love Twitter and Instagram, being able to share both original and other folks' original content there. And that's at TD Athletes Edge. So you can find me on Facebook and YouTube as well, with search with my name, Tim DeFrancesco, love to communicate, interact with people on there. So if you hop on there and end up catching me somewhere on one of those platforms, be sure to, give a shout out. 'Cause I love, going back and forth. Like you said earlier, you walk away from those types of interactions being a better strength coach and having learned something. So for me, that's what it's about.
Absolutely, man. And it's a testament to you, obviously. I mean, you're a busy man in season, Los Angeles Lakers, and you're still giving back to the community, man. So I appreciate you coming on the show. Thanks so much, buddy.
Hey, Ron, thank you so much, brother.
That's it for this episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk. Thanks to this week's guest, as well as our sponsors, for bringing this episode to you for free. Make sure to check out ronmckeefrey.com, where you can join our mailing list, find the show notes, including all the links and resources mentioned, and information about Coach McKeefrey's other products. While you are there, please join Coach McKeefrey in the comments section thanking our guest for sharing. If you haven't subscribed to Iron Game Chalk Talk on YouTube or iTunes yet, make sure to do so. Comments, ratings, and reviews are always welcome. Coach McKeefrey can be found on Twitter at @rmckeefrey. On Facebook and YouTube at @ron.mckeefrey. That's it for this week. Be sure to check back next week for another great episode of Iron Game Chalk Talk.